That's great.
He said so many things.
And we're meeting, and I'm really glad. We've got some stuff to talk about. I'm excited. We have our favorite public firefighter in the back with his hands on his hips, ready to make some comments back there. I am really excited that we're going to be able to have these topics covered today. So I would like to officially call the meeting to order. I think we are at 9:30. The first order of business is the approval of the minutes of the August 4th meeting.
Move for approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Okay. Public comments for anyone from the public that would like to come up and speak. We should all be able to recite your address, but I forget it.
Kevin Kinane, 3032 River Vista Way in Mount Pleasant. Sorry, I didn't make the last meeting somehow. But in the course of this year, we've had yet another total loss over in the Hamlin Plantation. You're going to learn about accreditation and what they tell the fire department, hey, we need to improve this or do better there. And there's always, it's a constant stream of improvement, so it's not anything negative to say that improvements can be made, for sure. But that Hamlin area is very troubling because it's the second time in very recent memory where we had a total house loss in daytime hours. And there's really no engine over there. You have a rescue company, which is a very large truck that has a smaller pump on it. And that's who's supposed to be going to stretch that first hose line. First hose line is what's going to save your life, can save your family's life, without question. The rescue company's great, and they're great firefighters, as is every company in town here. But they cover the whole town. So maybe they're going to be at a wreck on the Ravenel Bridge one day when that next time when fire comes. And when we have multiple fatalities, and I say when, not if, because it's coming. People are going to say, what happened? They're going to blame this gentleman and the gentleman over here. The politicians are going to try. They did it in Charleston. They're going to try and blame them. The real blame falls up there, unfortunately. 2 years ago, we had four meetings. We were harsh, pretty harsh stuff. Tom, you were there. We covered resiliency with the chief, and I think his exact quote, correct me, chief, if I'm wrong, was, resiliency is what keeps me up at night, which means what happens when there's something going on, where's that second response coming from? North Charleston, Daniel Island, to Tupelo, say? Is that okay with you? I mean, you drive these roads. Every month it gets worse, and every month our staffing is flatlined. I mean, 2 years ago, we put a five-year plan in place, or we tried to, and I heard the administrator say, maybe at the last budget cycle, we're just not going to reach the firefighter staffing. And my question is, why not? The why not is, you know, it's a lot easier to stand out there and take your picture in front of a new fire station. It's a lot harder when you're hiring three new firefighters. Nobody's getting any publicity off of that. So the certain politicians who thrive on that don't care about staffing, but it has to be made a priority. And when people die, they're going to go back to those four meetings that we had where the chief himself is on the record. He covered himself. He covered his men, but now, and women. But now, it's time to take what we learned at those four meetings 2 years ago and bolster the staffing of the fire department. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kinane. Any other public comments? Okay. Item four is the review of the accreditation annual compliance report. And this is not a new report, certainly. Correct. So we're anxious to hear any updates on that.
Yes, sir. So every year we have to fill out this report, submit it to the accrediting body. Typically it's done in the summer, but just like everything with this year, it was delayed as a result of COVID at their level, not ours. So we just submitted it last month, and part of what they want us to do is bring some of these response times to you and just talk about where we are in this report. And I can provide the full report to you after this meeting. I'll email it to you just so you can read through it. It has some of the recommendations that they've had, the previous 5 years, how we've achieved those, and what we're looking to do in the future. Today is just kind of a response time and call total review as part of what they want us to bring to you. And I'll go through it, and please, as always, ask any questions along the way. All right, so as you can see, it remains the majority of our calls are medical in nature, and we've set ourselves up in a good position to have paramedics on several of our trucks so that we're in a position to handle this should EMS not be close by. If they're tied up on another call, if their units aren't in Mount Pleasant, we're in a good position to affect a positive outcome in somebody that's really sick because of our paramedic program. And I'll point out that, you know, at first glance, just seeing this chart, you say, okay, wow, the majority of what we do is medical. Should not that be the focus of our effort, of our training, of our money? And I get that understanding, but these type of calls are high frequency, low risk. We're really good at them. We run them every day. We train on them. It's second nature, and there's typically nothing in there that's going to get our personnel hurt or even the patient hurt because we're there just to maintain it. So,
Chief, can you give us an example of what a type of call that might be?
Sure. It can be anything from a stub toe to a heart attack, a stroke, a car accident, anything that falls within a medical nature. So we respond on the majority of calls. Now, you'll see last year our call volume actually dropped because in the medical category, we looked at some ways to kind of draw back a little bit and keep our units in place for non-critical calls. So responding to a doctor's office for a transport, we felt that if it wasn't critical, we didn't need to be there. That was an EMS function they were going to transport to the hospital. So we drew back on a few of those calls to keep us more available. But those call types are anything medical in nature that an ambulance is going to respond, we're going to respond with them. So that's, again, the bulk of what we do is that. And we're really well trained and we're good at it because we do it all the time. And you can see statistically, fires, hazardous calls, severe weather, you know, overpressures, ruptures, things of that nature, it's only about 3 to 4% of our call volume. But we focus on that in training and in our SOGs and things because those low frequency, high risk are where either the public's going to get hurt, property's going to be lost, or our firefighters are going to be hurt. So I just wanted to point that out that, yes, at first glance, it looks like, wow, we should focus all of our efforts on medical, our funding, but it's really those other types of calls that can get us in a situation to either be hurt or have a large property loss. So that's kind of how that breaks out. Let's see. So property type. The majority of our calls are residential in nature. That's multifamily or that single family dwelling. So as a community, how we're structured, that kind of makes sense. We have a large housing contingent, so that's where we're responding. And then second is the healthcare. And within that healthcare, about 12 to 1300 of those calls are nursing facilities. And then it kind of shakes out from there. Outside properties, roadways, those accidents that we talked about, businesses, assemblies or larger structures like churches or gymnasiums, things of that nature. So that's how our call types shake out in the property type realm. So these are our responses by year. Traditionally, they've gone up every year, but last year we did see a drop because we looked at those call types where we weren't absolutely needed, that were simply, there was already a medical professional there at, say, a doctor's office where they simply needed transport to the hospital, and we pulled back from those to try to keep us more available for other more pressing calls. So this was the first year we've had a drop in probably at least 20 years, but it was for good reason to try to keep us more available and kind of curb some of those calls we need to be on. So here's kind of where we get to the response times. The way that accreditation looks at it, we don't look at an average, we don't look at the halfway mark, we look at the 90 percentile. So out of 100 calls, we'll go to the 90th call, and that's where our benchmarks and baselines are drawn from. So it's not an average, it's basically the 90th percentile of 90% of the time we want to meet these call response time criteria. For the EMS, you can see we've stayed pretty consistent, and it's a large data set. It's 5,000 calls a year that we're looking at. So compared to the structure fires, which is a small data set, this is a pretty accurate representation of what we're seeing. Now you'll notice in the alarm handling, according to the NFPA, they actually have a little bit longer to handle the call. They have 90 seconds because they're gaining some, trying to glean some knowledge out of the caller. What type of call it is, how many units we need to send, what's the medical nature. So they have 90 seconds in that, and they meet that every year, and then we typically try to get out the door within 60 seconds, which we exceed that. So you'll see that our benchmark for the first arriving unit on scene is 7 minutes and 30 seconds, and we're pretty close to that every year. That means the first unit that can provide paramedic level care is to the door within that 7 minute mark. And then for the total call volume, it's about 9 minutes and 40 seconds from the time that the caller picks up the phone to call 911 that we want to have a unit there. And we look at both EMS times and Mount Pleasant Fire Department times because we provide the same level, so whoever gets there first can stop that clock. And that's how they want us to break it out each year, and we're pretty consistent over the last 4 years, as you can see. And like we talked about for fires, it's a much smaller data set. So traditionally it's 12 to 15. Last year we had a little bit more fires as far as that were counted with 24. So what gets counted as a fire? We had about 200 fire calls last year, but for the data set, we only count those that are complete emergency response forces there. So that's four engines, a ladder, and a battalion chief. If our units arrive and they say, okay, this is a simple thing, we don't need all the units, we don't count those calls because it didn't meet our emergency response force. So last year, 24 of those calls met that criteria where each of the units that was dispatched made it to the scene without being canceled. So again, it's a pretty small number. So with only 24 calls or 16 calls, when you go to that 90th percentile, just a call or two can really throw off the times. But they've still remained pretty much the same over the last 4 years, and we'll look at the 2020 data coming up. But we're really looking at that first unit that gets there that's able to pull that first hose line and put out the fire. So the numbers are staying pretty consistent, and we've put in some measures like the traffic preemption system. We really want to see what that does in 2020. As you remember, that's the thing in the traffic lights that basically turn it green as we're approaching. So we're curious to see how that affects not only EMS times, but fire times and overall response times, in hopes that, you know, it makes sense that we could get there quicker if some of this traffic is cleared out the way. So that's our response time data. As I mentioned, I can send you the full report. You can see not only response times, but the recommendations that they made 5 years ago and the progress that we made towards some of those things. For instance, source capture on the diesel engine. That's something that we were able to get in each station. You know, it attaches to the truck. It reduces the diesel particulate. So that's just one of the things that you'll see in there that is traditional for what they recommend when they come every 5 years, things that we can do to improve.
Well, thank you for that report. And I think the last two pages is kind of where the rubber meets the road.
Yes, sir.
That's what I think has the most meaning. I'm sure we'll have some questions. I'd like to start with one. I love statistics, but I don't know what this means in relation to national. I mean, I know what batting averages are and points per game and what that is. But so my question is, where do we fall with these numbers as it relates to either other local departments or national standards, or even your accreditation marks? Is there a benchmark in your department that you say, we want to have alarm handling time under this, we want to have under that? How are we doing according to what you would like to see us?
Yeah, that's a good question. The accreditation model has moved toward the NFPA, which we've talked about a lot in regards to other things. It's a standard and it's a guideline, but it's not a law, basically.
Right.
So we fall shy of what the NFPA says. Now, it's a really ambitious standard. It would be tough for us to get there, and I'm not trying to say that we shouldn't look to get there, but I believe once we kind of meet these benchmarks, then we move toward that NFPA, and that should ultimately be our goal. But how do we infill, or how do we move trucks around to kind of reduce some of these response times and looking at the NFPA in the future? So that's the one that accreditation recognizes. And
if we're not meeting that, mm-hmm. What do you think from a support standpoint would you need in order for us to meet that?
Well, in our jurisdiction, I think it's tough. We're very linear. I think the traffic preemption helps. I think Station 4 helps. That secondary unit, we talked about putting a ladder truck there. could be a ladder truck, could be an engine, but really looking at where we are, we're probably not going to expand anymore, maybe a little bit of the north area, but, you know, even looking at Station 7, Bowman Road, what does that become in the future now that we're trying to acquire that building? So I think from this point, it's kind of looking how we infill, what are our target spots that, where we really can't get close to those response times, and figuring out methods to get there quicker. Like I talked about, the emergency response force, that last number, once we get all the trucks there, that doesn't stop until that final truck is there. And we're going to talk about auto aid in the next topic, but I really think there's some times where auto aid would help us stop the clock sooner. For example, a Charleston engine coming from Daniel Island to Long Point Road would probably get there quicker than a Dunes West station or the station on McCann. So I think auto aid is also a way, in some situations, not all, to where we can stop the clock quicker by getting all the trucks there sooner. And we would help the city and other jurisdictions in the same way, responding over the bridge or up 41 or to Daniel Island. So it's kind of a give and take, but there are some ways, auto aid, traffic preemption, looking at infill, that we can get closer to these numbers.
Any comments? Mr. Chapman?
Chief, you mentioned that in our agenda, we have an item about automatic aid coming up. Are we able to count the Sullivan's Island automatic aid with these numbers?
It kind of depends on what we're looking at. Yes, we are.
So that's another advantage to us, mm-hmm, of having that automatic aid. Go ahead. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, so any, as far as ISO goes, you know, accreditation and ISO are two separate things. ISO, we don't necessarily get a lot of points toward our classification from auto aid just because of distance. But on the accreditation side for response time numbers, yes. Any vehicle that is either an engine or a ladder or a battalion chief that gets there, no matter what is on the side of the truck, can stop that clock because they're doing essentially the same function that a Mount Pleasant engine would or a Mount Pleasant ladder. So yes, to answer your question, on these response time side, we could count whoever it is, at Sullivan's, Isle of Palms, Allendale, Charleston, North Charleston, whoever they may be.
Anything else? Any other comments or questions? Okay. Before we leave this discussion, the only thing that I think bothers me is sometimes I use the standards when I want to use them.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we gloss over the standards when we don't look good with the standards, I guess. I think if a standard is there, we should attempt to meet it somehow. And I don't, you know, I don't think this is done today. I don't think we bring anything to council tomorrow, but budgets are where we live for another year. And the one thing Mr. Kinane said that I agree with is if something really tragic happens, it isn't you, it's us. We're the support for you. So I hope that that during my last few months on this fire committee, we could make sure that you have all the tools that you need to be able to do what you need to do, I hope. So I'll leave it with that. I'm sorry. Yes, please.
I was just slow to respond, sorry. Chief, so I don't necessarily hear you saying this, but I think maybe sometimes we just have to ask and make sure we understand fully. Would you say that one of the things that would help the most, because I know one of the biggest issues, the couple of them were extra hook and ladder trucks, but another one was personnel. And we did add 6 personnel with the safer. Yeah, right. And the intention was that over 5 years we would keep adding, and COVID and a lot of things that happened have pushed it back a bit. So I guess the biggest question, what we don't want to have happen, in kind of just extrapolating from what our chairman is saying, is we don't want you to not have the personnel you need, and then a tragedy happens, and then we're like, what the heck, why didn't we do this? So that's really my biggest question, is you're talking about response times. We know that's involved in personnel and equipment. I've heard the example of the what if we're doing an automatic gate over the bridge and now something happens on the far other end of town. So tell us, I mean, do you feel at this point that you really do need more staff than what you have to be able to get to where you need to be as a force?
Thank you. So we have added 12 in the past couple of years. We added 6 with the SAFER, and then we added 6 before that to try to increase the staffing on the ladder trucks as a first step. And the SAFER was kind of looking at the future ladder truck. So I think we made some good steps. I think Station 4 gives us added space to bring up an additional unit. But it is personnel, and it is potentially another engine or two. And I do believe that y'all have approved in the strat plan kind of the vision going forward. I don't believe anything is new or earth-shattering that I haven't shared with y'all or that you haven't seen or addressed. But ultimately, yes, I think in the future, you know, staffing, just like any department, staffing is always a concern. It does cost a lot of money, and so do the ladder trucks. I mean, these are really expensive things we're talking about. But I do think as we get closer and closer to completing the strategic plan that we're putting ourselves in a good position, and then we'll do another 5-year plan looking at, you know, continue looking at response times, but different ways we can improve. So the short answer is yes. I think with these 12, we've made a good stride, but just like the strat plan shows, there's room for growth in the future with personnel and apparatus.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Rambo.
So Tom kind of asked my question. I wasn't sure exactly what all of these numbers really truly mean. But when we look at the data, I'm sure there's a way to tell. I mean, are there certain areas of town where there's just not the same response time as others? Or
yes, sir. So, and it's kind of hard. And let's take Rivertown, for example.
Okay.
It's such a large neighborhood. All the way in the back of Rivertown is a long way. Now, we have a station right there in Dunes West with anticipation years ago of Dunes West building out, of Rivertown building out. So it is a little tougher to get back there, but what is the solution to that? Without having to build a station in the back of Rivertown, what are some ways we can get there quicker or be more prepared when we get there? So there are pockets of town that are a little tougher to get to. Hamlin Plantation's one. It's kind of in the middle of two stations, Station 6 in Carolina Park and Station 4 on 6 Mile. The response times aren't that bad. The two fires that I mentioned, I can share those response times with you. But there are pockets that are a little bit more difficult to get to just because we're surrounded by water. We don't have a gridded roadway system. We can't get to everything as quickly as other things, which, you know, I don't like that, but it's simply geography, I think, in some of these situations.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Landing?
I have one follow-up. I would like you to share the response times and what happened in both of those cases, since that was brought up, because I recall on the first one, I don't know the response time. I do recall that I believe this is the house that nobody was there. It started in, like, maybe the upper floor, maybe attic, and there was no alarm system or something, and so therefore it was only after a neighbor or someone saw some smoke. So it was already fairly far along before y'all would have even been able. It had very little to do with your response time from what I understood, and much more to do with the circumstances at that property. So would you extrapolate on both that and the other one that we heard about?
Sure. So the first one, I believe, is October of 18, could have been 17, but it was a daylight fire. It was one of those weird situations where nobody saw it. It was a very windy day. Started somewhere in the area of the front porch, and the wind basically just pushed it through the house, and it was a large volume of fire when we got there. I don't recall the exact response times, but they were within normal range of what we would expect for that area. And same with the second fire that happened this year. A daytime fire, an 8 o'clock in the morning fire. The occupant had just gone out to take a walk, and then all of a sudden, you know, the neighbors noticed there's a lot of fire coming from this house. But in both cases, response times were decent. I'll share those with y'all. I have them saved, and I'll share them with you after this committee. But in both cases, they weren't bad. But it is an area that is kind of in the middle of two responding stations. So how can we do better? I don't want to just say, well, you know, it's just the condition of that neighborhood where they are, like, I don't believe that's the answer. How can we do better? Response times weren't bad necessarily in those two situations, but how do we do a better service to these neighborhoods that are kind of tucked farther back? And that's something that I have to bring to y'all as a recommendation.
Really good comments, people. Anything else on this issue, Ms. Landing?
To what degree, I know it's happened in different communities, and sometimes it's through volunteers and other things. To what degree do we help, like in those situations, accentuate what they already have on their property for alarming and so forth? Things that can be donated if it's not something that's comfortable to purchase, et cetera. To what degree can we help them have a better system to notify you?
So the neighborhood, you're saying?
Well, each house, each neighborhood, whatever it takes.
Well, they did a really good thing after that second fire. They were concerned, obviously. They felt like, you know, they had two large fires in their neighborhood within 3 years. So, and there was a lot of misconception about how long it took to get to 911, and they felt like it took 10, 20 minutes to even get through to 911. And in those situations of panic, a lot of times time is not relevant because you're watching your neighbor's house burn. So what they did, they asked me and the dispatch center, the 911 dispatch center, to do a Zoom meeting with them. So we met with the HOA, we cleared up a lot of misconceptions, gave them a lot of tips on, hey, here's some things you can do in your own home, here's what an actual 911 response looks like, if you see fire, here's what you should do, shouldn't do. So I really think reaching out to HOAs in general and kind of saying, okay, what is your conception of the fire department, the 911 system, and then kind of clarifying some of that and giving them some tips to be like, to have a better response from us and what normal 911 response times look like. So I think that's us reaching out, and while I've talked to the individual that was representing the 911 center, and it was kind of the first time we've done it in Mount Pleasant, and she'd never done it before in the area, so we really want to branch out and kind of get that education standpoint out to the entire community. So we're looking at building that now.
Thank you. Any other comments from the committee? Thank you. The next item is a discussion of automatic aid agreements. And I would like to start off by saying that I want to be respectful of the calendar and the time that we have for the meetings today. We're not going to finish this discussion today. I know that. It's too important. And we're not going to just blow it off, and we're not just going to hurry through it. So what I'd like to do today is to get the issues on the table, and then at next month's committee meeting, we really get into the meat of that. I don't know if there'll be, that could be the sole topic. But automatic aid, mutual aid, aid in general is something that's going to be important, not just for our town, but for the region, because we'll be, you know, we've talked about Selma's Island, Mount Pleasant. It's way more than that, as you know. So I think it will be good for that later. So this is a topic that we had danced around a few months ago, and it's important that we address it at this point in time. And it started as an agenda item at a meeting with Sullivan's Island, where we discussed automatic aid as compared to mutual aid. So if you can highlight what this discussion is, I'll figure out when we should kind of cut it off and move on.
Yes, sir. And out of respect for time, I can do this pretty quickly. So as y'all remember, mutual aid was requesting aid through the dispatch center via radio, telephone, has to be done manually. Automatic aid happens automatically at the dispatch center when you have those agreements. So the only one we have currently is Sullivan's Island. But as you'll see in our strat plan, we are looking at what does it mean to go auto aid with other larger departments in the area? Is that a benefit to us? Is it a benefit to them? You can see a year's time frame, August 1st, 19 to August 31st, 2020. It's actually 13-month time frame, but it's pretty even what we're giving and what we're receiving. In some cases, we give a little more than we receive. In other cases, we receive a little more than we give. So at a county level, you know, I feel really good about our agreements. I don't think we're being used, and I don't think that we're using anybody else excessively. I think it's a good mutual aid partnership. reflected in these numbers. So, as you mentioned, in our strat plan, we have been looking at this for a while. We've been in discussions just broadly with the city of Charleston, North Charleston, some of the bigger departments, what does it look like for them? And we're not looking for an action item today or even in the next few months, but we would like to kind of move forward and gather more data and look in, do we make the jump into the auto aid agreement with the bigger departments, or do we stay where we are? And addressing some of those concerns, like Ms. Landing said, of, well, if we're out at another jurisdiction, what does that look like for our citizens? So bringing that to y'all at a future date, once we have a little bit firmer of an answer of what it looks like for Mount Pleasant, but did want to start the discussion now as it is part of our strat plan.
Okay, so what you're saying is that this is an issue, but we have to study it a little bit more before we take council action. Mm-hmm. Mr. Santos, I know that you've had some issues. Would you like to address us with
Chief, can you go back to the next slide?
Brief, yes, sir.
Slide. Yes, and I'll be very brief. You know, we were here, like you said, a while back and talked about this. Listen, I love automatic aid. I think it's great. We have mutual aid with Isle of Palms, and apparently we were supposed to have automatic aid with Sullivan's Island. So back in March 2009, Chief Williams signed an agreement with Chief Stith for automatic aid. However, back in October 14th of 2009, council did a resolution establishing mutual aid. As we know, resolutions take precedent over a letter between staff on agreements on what we're going to do. And so, I mean, they, Post and Courier even ran a big, you know, picture of us signing the automatic, I mean, or the mutual aid agreement between Isle of Palms and Solomon's Island. So I brought it up because it appears to me, and after speaking to our attorney at the time, that the last thing he had was that we have mutual aid with Sullivan's Island and not automatic aid. So apparently we've been responding, and as you see up here, you know, we've it looks like it's double for us responding rather than them responding to us. And I don't have a problem with that. Honestly, I think automatic aid, if it's helpful, then I'm all for it. But we got to do it legally. If one of our trucks get in a wreck on the way, the first thing they're going to do is dial all nines, and we're going to be in a lawsuit because we shouldn't have automatically gone off, you know, to a fire when we don't have automatic aid agreements. So I wanted to just bring that up so that we can take a look at this and see if that's what we want to do. We need to change this through resolution or through whatever so that we can do it legally and be a part of that legally. But right now, from what I see and from what our attorney tells me, the last document he can pull shows a mutual aid agreement, the last legal document. And so that's all I want to do. I mean, you know, I know we had issues during the pandemic about, you know, Sullivan's Island and Isle of Palms. I know Sullivan's Island wouldn't even let our firefighters come over there with their children on the beach and dig in the sand. I mean, that I know that upset a lot of people. And Mr. Rambo, if I remember correctly, you had some comments on that.
It's easy to upset Mr. Rambo, by the way.
I don't care about it. I don't care about all that's behind us. I think we need to look at automatic aid, yeah, as opposed to mutual aid. And automatic aid is great. We just got to do it legally. We've got to make sure everything's done right. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Santos. Right. Let's do this. I think all the issues are on the table, which is good. I think we should together work on some agenda items for the January meeting and then do whatever we need to do from there, if that's okay. You guys are great. I mean, you do an amazing job, and you're under a way bigger microscope than anybody thinks and sees. So we appreciate what you do. But as you heard today, you've got four people up here that are with you.
Yes, sir.
Thank and you. we want to make sure that that you have the tools you need to prevent anything catastrophic from happening in this town to our residents. So we appreciate that. Is that okay if we push this off another month for that? Everybody? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to mention, I know Mr. Santos said double with Sullivan's Island, but the sheet that's up there now is mutual aid. It's not for what's happened with automatic aid.
I'm sorry, that is a little confusing. Sullivan's is auto on that. It is underneath the category. I just wanted to show all the times that we responded.
Okay.
So to clarify, that one line item is auto aid, sir.
Thank you.
Anything else for the good of the cause? The last agenda item is to adjourn. Thank you very much, everyone. Good meeting.
Thank you.
We don't need to sit here and fight with that. We'll get everything cleaned up early. We'll take action.